Grade 2 Conference, Lecture 8, The Second Grader, Part 8. Now we'll have a look at working with the sanguine child in Grade 2. When we talk about the melancholic and the phlegmatic child, you may have noticed that I said almost nothing about discipline or what to do when they misbehave. I mentioned that the phlegmatic will perhaps now and then punch people so hard that he draws blood and breaks some windows, things like that. But, you know, that's once in 8 years or so. And the melancholic child is so deeply concerned with his or her own inner state that there again, it's not going to be until the upper grades that one might have real misbehavior. The worst that melancholics do as they get older is to sort of bring down the mood of the class. They can really lower morale very quickly. Or they bring down the mood of the teacher and lower her morale very quickly by saying, 3.5 weeks ago, you promised that you would take us out for a walk today, and you haven't said anything about it. Did you forget again? That sort of thing. So they have incredible memories. So really, you have to realize that, you know, a whole lot of children in your class are rarely, if ever, presenting real discipline issues. It's only when they get older and get into 6th, 7th, and 8th grade and, you know, look around and think, oh my God, look what I've been missing all these years. I could get in trouble and that would really make everybody notice me. And that's a different matter. That's coming from, you know, the astral world, not what we're seeing in the world of the temperament. So now you come to the sanguine, and here you have the beginnings of, you know, trouble and issues of misbehavior. And I think one can say that for the most part, the sanguine child is going to be misbehaving in a mischievous way. Now, you know, mischief sounds kind of cute and sweet, and we have the twinkle in the eye, as Rudolf Steiner said, when you have to speak to a child about a discipline issue, you know, really let them know how important it is, but let them look in your eyes and see a kind of gleam in there, which also tells them at the same moment that you recognize it's not the end of the world, it's not the most important thing, it's okay, don't worry. That has to be there as well, and that is a real challenge for a teacher. One might say that, you know, from the point of view of your ego, you're sort of asserting world law, and this is the way it must be. You can't fool around like that. But then your astral body has to be shining through as well to say to the sanguine who lives so strongly already as a child in the astral world, I've been there too. I know what you mean. I know what's going on. So very, very big challenge in a certain way. And in fact, Steiner says that when they misbehave, which is often in one little way or another, that the sanguine child in the end cannot be reached by sort of biblical injunctions of thou shalt not, thou must not, but rather we love you so much, not just I, your teacher, but your parents, everyone, we all love you so much, and it was disappointing to see you do that, or we just couldn't understand what would lead you to do that. And you will see very often, I'm not saying to say exactly that, you know, you don't want to kind of make it overly sentimental and sugary, but just an honest letting the child know that people really like them a lot. That's important to a sanguine. and to remain liked, to remain popular, to be loved by others, they will do all kinds of things. They'll move heaven and earth, and they'll even control themselves to some extent. And of course, we have to think here of, you know, the sanguine temperament living in a whole sector of the adult world, which is the world of entertainment. The stars, what do they call stars? What does astral mean? Astra, star. So we understand, we put a star on such a person's dressing room. We understand that such a person has a very strong connection to the astral world and their own astral body. And they are able to stand on a stage and to evoke, elicit love in thousands and thousands of people, you know, night after night after night, or through a recording or a movie or something like that. They are able to do the same thing for millions, hundreds of millions, billions of people. Can you imagine what that takes to be able to get others to feel love for you, whom they are seeing from a great distance, from thousands of feet away, or whom they have never seen in person, and yet somehow or other you can convey that? So this is serious stuff with a sanguine. They are usually very appealing. On the other hand, because, as I've said, the astral body is never more than 50% within us. It's like our breath. It's half in and half out. There's also a part of them which is equally insecure, equally uncertain that anybody really loves them. No, when I get up there on stage, I've got a ton of makeup and I've got glamorous clothing and the lighting and the musicians around me and whatever else I've got. You don't know me. You don't know what I'm really like inside. You just see the other half of my being. So on the other hand, they're often very fragile individuals, very delicate, and very, very insecure. So this is another side of the sanguine. And you want to help that sanguine to, as it were, turn all of that beauty and that appeal and that positiveness and that joy. You want them to turn that into something that they can really give to others in a genuine way, because it's coming out of something deep. What we're trying to help the sanguine do is to find depth, to find inwardness, to find an anchor. Otherwise, they will be completely spending their life in search of, you know, outer, generally superficial acclaim and satisfaction and joy and whatever. They need to find something of an inner life. But they can only do this by drinking of their sanguinity to its dregs. And that's especially powerful. You really want to do that in grade 2, grade 3. If you didn't start in grade 1, you still have some time. By the end of grade 3, by the middle of grade 4, the sanguine in particular, that's the one you want to watch, that they are getting tired of just being sanguines, that they want to move to another temperament. They may beg you to move them away from the other sanguines because they're always getting me in trouble by passing notes or giggling or whatever. And this is a very good thing, because once the sanguine gets into 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, when the astral body comes strongly for all students, even you'll see it in 3rd grade when the astral body makes a guest appearance in the child's life, it can really throw them for a loop and really take them into, you know, like all that matters is one's looks and having a girlfriend or a boyfriend and being the social center of the class, that superficiality and that kind of danger of easily being led hither and thither, that can set in. So of all of the temperaments, the sanguine, which is the most charming, most delightful, you know, you might wish you had two or three more in the class to really bring up everyone's spirits. When a sanguine child leaves a class, everybody feels it, even children who didn't like her especially. They feel the loss. So certainly it's a wonderful temperament to have, but you want to be making sure that forces of transformation are being awakened and work with, even in the second grade year. Now here's a way of really helping the sanguine in your class. Though I have to say, what I'm about to say is not terribly popular around Waldorf teachers when I say this. So let me just preface it by saying that you want all four temperaments to see that you carry their temperament too, only you've brought it under some control or you've harmonized it with the other temperaments. So you want the melancholic to know now and then, you've got a headache, you've got a stomach ache, you're not feeling so great today, your life is no bed of roses either, but you keep teaching anyway, and you've got a smile on your face, and you're helping other people, and you're actually finding that all of that helps you overcome your own inner pain. Not that you're giving them lectures in this way, but you're showing them, not all the time, but now and then, let them see you have a melancholic side. If you don't naturally have a melancholic side, then develop it. The phlegmatic, every snack time, every lunch time, let them watch you delighting in what you eat and commenting on how good your sandwich is, and my gosh, these seaweed chips are the most tasteful I've ever had. Whatever it is, let them see that you too, whether you're macrobiotic or not by nature, can savor your food and enjoy that, and maybe share with the class now and then a wonderful wedding you went to during the weekend and what you ate there. Okay, and with the cholerics, you want them to see that you are capable of incredible anger, that you too can rant and rage. It may just be the way you're telling a story now and then. It may be sometimes the way you talk to them, but not because you lose control. Because you can control it. You can turn it on, turn it off. The cholerics really, really are impressed with that. They really appreciate seeing how you have to work with that and struggle with it and succeed with it as well. What about the sanguine? One of the most important things that you can do for the sanguine child is once a week, or if it's too painful for you, once a month, that's all you need to do it. Really dress up. Okay, see what I mean? You don't like that. I know. Okay, take it easy. For women, I would say wear some kind of glamorous dress or skirt or something, and maybe heels. And maybe makeup. For men, wear some really nice tie and jacket. And, you know, look like you're about to go to a party or you're going to have a dinner date with somebody who really may play a big part in your future professionally or whatever. Show those sanguines that you know about fashion and you know about designer clothes and that you know how to look really, really nice. They will be very, very impressed and very moved when they see that. And I assure you, they'll go home and they'll tell their parents about that. Now, I could give a whole conference just of anecdotes of what I've experienced in my own teaching and in the many schools I visited, and I tend to not want to do that. Maybe in the future I'll have a conference of, you know, my 100 favorite jokes or something like that. But I want to share this with you because this whole area of how we dress as Waldorf teachers is just, it's something that people don't really want to penetrate too deeply. You know, it's all about being comfortable. And if I wanted to dress up, I'd, you know, go work in a fancy New England private school or something like that. But let me share this with you. I've had a very strong connection with the Shining Mountain Waldorf School in Boulder, Colorado. And even on one of my sabbatical years, went there and stayed there for, almost 8 weeks, I think, and taught a couple of blocks in the high school. Wonderful experience. And Shining Mountain is one of the cutting-edge schools in the United States. It has been from the day it opened its doors. They have a very affluent student body, and the parents there, they're highly educated, very individual, you know, people who live in the mountains and just lead their own lives and so on. And the student body carries these qualities too, kind of a libertarian sensibility there. And as you might imagine, the dress code is always at the cutting edge of whatever. Uniforms are not required in the school by any means. And the teachers also super casual in what they wear most of the time, most of the teachers. So one night there was a big kind of talent night in which the students were performing various things, and they are a gifted group altogether. It was really wonderful. And then as a special treat, the high school art teacher was going to show a talent that most people did not realize he had, which is that he had been trained in voice and was actually an operatic level voice, and he was going to be performing for the students. So where was he? Where nobody had seen him the whole night. And a couple of people said, he's fine, he will come, don't you worry. So he's announced, everyone waited, and he comes out of the backstage and appears. He's wearing white tie and tails. I am not sure that anybody ever in the history of Boulder, Colorado has ever appeared in that city wearing white tie and tails, but certainly not in Shining Mountain Waldorf High School. Do you know that the entire student body who was there stood up and gave him a standing ovation before he sang a note because of the way he was dressed? Because that just totally blew them away and impressed them. And that's all people could talk about for the next 3 weeks that I was there. I'm sure that was all they talked about until the end of the school year. This is how powerful an effect this can have. And I would say there's certainly an all-over sanguine quality in Shining Mountain, which is a wonderful thing to experience altogether. And I would say for sanguine children, dress up now and then. They're not the only ones who'll be impressed. The rest of the class will be. Phlegmatics might not notice it so much, but the other children will. So I go into length about that because the way we look is something that, in a way, the sanguines can help us here. They have something to tell us. You know, we spend a lot of time, especially in the primary grades, making our desk something beautiful, making our nature table, if you have one, something very beautiful, putting a beautiful blackboard drawing on the board and even writing out the day's schedule beautifully. Beauty, beauty, beauty. But what is it that the children have to look at more than anything else in the classroom for a good deal of the day? You. And here people are, you know, wearing their jeans and their old running shoes and feeling really comfortable and so on, but not really becoming part of the beauty, part of the order, the form, and to some extent the aesthetic that informs the rest of the classroom. So the Sanguines ask that of us, and that's very important. And I ask you, no matter, you know, how stuffy East Coast you think I'm being right now, to take that seriously for their sake. So that anecdote put me over time. I am going to go on talking about the Sanguine and segue into the Choleric in our next lecture.